The world's second largest listed energy company delivered an earnings shock to match its size on Thursday. Q2 profits slumped to a 30-month low. And worse for investors, the $3.6 billion headline figure was far below forecasts for close to $5 billion. That drove its shares down over 4% as analysts digested the whys. Weaker oil and gas prices, one reason. Despite OPEC production cuts, crude prices have slipped from this year's high of $75 a barrel to $65 now.
Trade talks between the U.S. and China in Shanghai wrapped up ahead of schedule on Wednesday without any visible signs of progress. The next meeting was pushed out to September, extending an uneasy truce between the world's two biggest economies for at least a month. The two sides both called the meetings constructive, but offered different views on whether China would buy more U.S. farm products.
Samsung's foldable smartphone is back. It's set to go on sale from September, the company said Thursday. The launch of the Galaxy Fold was delayed earlier this year when early units proved very fragile. It was due to hit the US market in April. Now the South Korean tech giant says it has improved the near $2,000 phone and was conducting final tests.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August the 2nd, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in this morning for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway. We've got a lot of ground to cover today. A busy day in the world of business today. We've got the jobs report coming today. Lots of news happening on trade. We had the Federal Reserve decision this week. We'll talk about all of it this morning with Susan Silvest, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest. She'll be with us first off this morning. Paul is off on this Friday. Paul Nolte will be back soon. Also this morning, did you know that probably, if you're a regular traveler, a loophole of sorts that you can finagle with your ticket, airline ticket, specifically United, that might get you a cheaper fare, but United doesn't like it, and it's really against the rules. Brian Summers will be with us this morning to talk about what United is doing to crack down on this. Coming up at about 5:38 this morning, Brian is the Senior Aviation Business Editor at skiff.com. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour as well, right here on 720 WGN. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The trading week is winding down after a rough day yesterday on Wall Street. Stocks headed south after President Trump said he plans to add more tariffs on China. The Dow closed the day down nearly 281 points. The Nasdaq fell 64. The S&P lost about 27 points. This morning, as we look at the futures markets, looks like it's going to be a weak opening this morning. Dow futures are down nearly a third off 79 points, nearly 80 points now. S&P futures are off nearly a half a percent. The Nasdaq futures are off more than a half a percent. Around the globe, a rough day in China and in Tokyo and Hong Kong as well. The Asian markets all in the red this morning. The Nikkei finishing the day down nearly 2% off 453 points. In Hong Kong, off nearly 647 points, nearly two and a third. And in China, off by nearly a percent and a half. In Europe, the markets are lower as well in a big way. In London, off nearly 2%, down nearly 145 points. In Germany, off nearly 300 points, down nearly 2.5%. And in France, off nearly 3%, nearly 2.3%, the CAC off 157 points. And oil is in the U.S. trading at $55.09, which is up about $1.14 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. President Trump says he's planning to impose an additional 10% tariff on Chinese goods. On Twitter yesterday, Trump said Chinese President Xi had failed to hold up on his promise to stop the sale of fentanyl in the U.S., and many Americans, according to the president, continue to die. The president had a lot to say about tariffs, and we'll go over some of that with Susan this morning in just a minute. On September 1st, the tariff will go into effect on the remaining $300 billion of goods. Trump says his administration is looking forward to continuing positive dialogue with China on one hand, but on the other says he wouldn't mind if we just stopped trading with China altogether, and we'll play president talking about that coming up. Also this morning, after nearly 8 decades of operation, GM's transmission plant in Warren, Michigan is halting production and closing its doors. It's one of 5 North American plants the automaker is shutting down as part of a restructuring to meet market demand for trucks and SUVs. The plant had employed around 200 people. Jobs and unemployment numbers today. Economists are forecasting 151,000 jobs were added last month. Let's begin this morning front and center. Susan Sylvestre is with us, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Sylvestre. Paul Nolte is off today, and so we're happy to have Susan this morning to talk a little bit about some of what's going on in the world. Susan, I want to begin first. Good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
I'm glad to have you back on. I want to begin first by playing a piece of sound of the president yesterday talking about trade and China. This is the president out on the lawn.
We have rebuilt China. So now it's time that we change things around. If they don't want to trade with us anymore, that would be fine with me. We'd save a lot of money.
That was the president yesterday talking about China out on the south lawn of the White House. The president imposing these tariffs says that this is a continuing tax on China. What's going on here?
Well, you know, trying to determine exactly what our president is thinking is obviously a challenge for most of us. It's a coordination of efforts, but it doesn't appear that the left side is talking to the right, proverbial, of course. You wonder, did we have the reduction in the Fed rate simply to complement the design of reducing the tariffs increasing the tariffs, and continuing to determine whether we can really work with China or not? They are doing what they traditionally do. They agree to a particular settlement, and it is common practice that when it comes right down to the signing of a document or the execution of agreement, they pull back as an additional negotiating factor. Trump did not like this. Your word is your word, and unfortunately, all countries do not honor the same negotiating tactics. So Trump is clearly frustrated. And that's why, again, the additional 10% threat on tariffs. One of the parts that his sentence states is that, you know, we are not being affected. I beg to differ. The companies here in the United States who do their manufacturing or even have assembly in China are directly feeling the impact. And let's be fair, that impact is going to flow right through to the consumer.
Yeah, and not only that, but now this new 10%, just in time for a holiday shopping. If we're taxing all of the goods that we get from China, we're already seeing, I think one estimate said people are paying at least $1,200 more a year in higher prices for things directly because of the tariffs. This is not good for the economy.
This is a real challenge to the American economy, and not just the numeric challenge and the rise in prices, but there's a psychological shift. It's, wait, there's so much unsettlement. We thought, as Americans, we tend to think that what's happening globally will not affect us. Yes, Germany's in recession. Yes, Europe's on the verge. Oh, but we are fine. Now, that's not true. If you see everything starting to occur, you have our U.S. president stating we're just going to continue to put pressure on that country and eventually they'll cave. They may or they may not, but the common investor here in the United States sits back in their chair and says, wait a minute, it's a head scratcher again. They say, if everything's not good, how long does it take before that bleeds into me? And to your point, they're feeling it already in their personal pocketbook. And so it's not just numeric. It's emotional.
Yeah, and I don't want to be cynical about it, but I get the sense that perhaps the timing of all of this, yesterday, the day after the Fed lowered interest rates for the first time in a decade by a quarter point, not as much as the president want, is he thinking that if he keeps the trade war going with China, the Fed will be forced to lower rates even further?
Or is it the other way around? Do we hold the fact that we can reduce the Fed rates even further so that it gives him, affords him enough more time to get through September 1? Well, you do also have the challenge that the Chinese are going to go on hiatus. They're going to go up to the North Shore. They're going to take some time off. They feel like they now have time on their hands. They didn't have an original deadline. Now they have September 1st, but that's between now and their hiatus. So they're going to go on vacation, and nothing will occur. So we will sit here and wait until September 1, twiddling our thumbs, waiting for someone to do something when we're in stalemate.
China, this morning, there's a statement out from China saying it doesn't want a trade war with the U.S., but is not afraid of fighting one. So this is just going to continue going on. We were talking earlier about all of the developments with the Fed and the China trade situation. What do we, as investors, do now? How do we position ourselves to sort of weather this little bit of a storm? After the Fed's decision, are there buying opportunities?
All good questions. The question really, back to what I shared with you before, is that when you're looking at what should a client or an investor do today, they really don't want to overreact. Nevertheless, they also want to put on their all-weather clothing and be prepared for quite a storm. Trump is not afraid of unruffling feathers or ruffling feathers and taking it back and forth and forth and back. So what I really want to encourage investors is to not overreact, especially with your long-term money. I would maybe encourage them, if they have some cash that's sitting in their accounts, that maybe they wait a little bit until some of this has passed. We ordinarily are in the summer doldrums anyway when it comes to investing. Traditionally, you know, everyone, that old saying, you know, go away and play, was because the markets are somewhat idle during the summer. And then we see somewhat of an increase in volatility come the early fall. Well, you couple the early or the traditional volatility in the fall with that September 1st date, it might be wise for our investors with their cash to just hang on for a bit, maybe not jump into anything, because we're seeing stocks like Lowe's. They're laying off people. We have Toyota that will probably they're challenged with their cars. We have buyer sentiment pulling back, so that's going to put the consumers and the consumer staples under pressure. So some of those categories where we're accustomed to seeing consistent growth may be stagnant or pull back a little bit. So to your point, when do we have a buying opportunity? Well, if you have long-term money and it's in your retirement account and you are sitting on cash, we might want to wait just a little bit. And then when it pulls back somewhere close to corrective terms, say a 10% pullback, which is possible, that's your buying opportunity.
As we look at the Fed's decision and kind of go back in history and chart some of what has happened in the past after similar adjustments, I know the Federal Reserve chair called this a mid-cycle adjustment. When this has happened at least once in the past, it led to some positive months for stocks, didn't it?
It did, but unfortunately those were not coupled with the threat of tariffs on China or India or anyone of that nature. So every, you know, this time it's different, maybe, maybe not. I know I seem to be speaking out of both sides of my mouth, but that's just exactly goes in hand with it depends. So we have seen rallies in the past, and that's exactly what the Fed was trying to do. They even said it in their remarks that they had three objectives. And those three objectives were to ensure the economy against downside risk based on global economic softness, to support the economy, and then to support that inflation goal of 2%, which we are clearly under. So they reserve the right to reduce the interest rates another 25 basis points if they see any of that slipping. Powell even said that if we have a pullback and we have any kind of slowing in the economy, it's easier to handle inflation than it is recession. So we've gone to something more that's not data driven, but it's more sentiment and dollar driven as far as the Fed decision. And that's a big shift in what they have done historically.
Susan, as we look at today, we have the jobs report. I guess data is a little less important now that the Fed's already made its decision, or do we still watch these data points as we move forward with the, you know, another Fed meeting coming up and another perhaps rate decision on the way? What do we look for in the jobs numbers today?
The jobs number expectation is that it will be lower. The placement, not the percentage of the unemployment rate, will probably go up, that we will not see as many new jobs being created with some of the layoffs, some of the reassignment of work. And so, yes, is that data point still important? Yes. That's because so many investors look at what's happening at some of these well-known data points, and they get nervous. So do advisors. They get nervous. They see sort of an accumulation of negative data and unsettling. So those data points are important, more in the sentiment of things, because to your point, the Fed already reacted. Now they have time on the side before they react again.
A wonderful conversation. I look at the markets this morning, and I'm wondering if we're seeing Asia and Europe getting ready to lead mm-hmm. our trading day, or if we led yes. their trading day. Do you think they're reacting to what happened yesterday, or is this a foreboding of what's coming today on the market?
Yes, they are reacting to what happened yesterday, and in turn, we will react to their markets. Okay. Our opening is directly related to what the overseas markets do. So, yes, it's sort of a domino effect. We started it. They're following. We will follow them. Well, where does it stop? Great question.
So buckle up is, in other words, a buckle up for the trading day.
Yes, sir.
All right. Susan, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too. Susan Silvest, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest in Dallas. You can find them online at murphysilvest.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Let's turn our focus down to the business of aviation and travel. Brian Summers is with us this morning for a conversation. Brian is the senior aviation business editor at skiff.com and is with us via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, I want to begin this morning with a story that you have at skiff.com about something called, I'm going to make sure I say this right, hidden city ticketing. The airlines apparently don't like this. And United is cracking down. What's going on?
Yeah, Steve. Hidden city ticketing is something, it's a ticketing issue that comes up every now and then. It's basically a travel hack. A ticket to a city you do not intend to visit so that you can save money. You know, you might fly from Chicago to San Francisco to Santa Ana, California, because you found a really cheap fare to Orange County, California from Chicago. But guess what, Steve? You actually want to go to San Francisco. So what do? You get off in the middle of the flight, and you just get off and you disappear in San Francisco. And all of a sudden, you've gotten yourself a great deal from Chicago to San Francisco because you really bought a fare that was designed to get you to Santa Ana. A lot of people think that this is perfectly fine, right? They bought the ticket. They can do whatever they want with it. Pretty much every airline in the world calls this fraud. They say you got to fly to the destination that you bought the ticket for. United sent out a memo to airport ticketing agents last week just reminding them to be on the lookout for this. It's not so unusual. I did get the memo. Somebody sent it to me. And I think what's most interesting to me is the language that they're recommending airports use to confront passengers that they're accusing of fraud, right? Because people may remember this big Dr. Dow incident of a couple years ago where United called security forcibly removed the person from the airplane. It was a very big deal. So United wants people to, they want their ticketing agents to very carefully ask folks why they're engaging in fraud and basically saying, you know, did you decide to get off early because you had a medical emergency, because something changed with your travel plans? We just want to make sure what's going on here before we really accuse you of anything big. But United does say, look, if we catch people doing this, we're going to refer them to our corporate security department. And corporate security at airlines, they're pretty tough. They may ask you to pay money to them, what the ticket would have cost. They can suspend your Mileage Plus account. That's the loyalty program. And they can even refer your matter to a collection agency if they want. So this is a big deal for airlines.
How widespread do you think this is in reality?
Very hard to tell. Airlines don't talk about it a whole lot. Historically, people like me, who are sophisticated travelers who knew what was going on, would kind of do it on the sly. We'd notice a good deal. We'd do it. We wouldn't tell anybody. Steve, as you probably know, the internet changes this, right? Because everybody knows all these travel hacks. So that there is a website out there called SkipLagged. And SkipLagged helps people buy these plane tickets that they never would have found on their own. So the practice is probably increasing now.
Brian, there's another story. This goes back to the 737 MAX grounding. Airliners paying pilots not to fly. What's going on?
Well, Steve, this is only one airline, and it's a unique circumstance. But the airline that you're speaking of is Air Canada. They're paying about 400 737 MAX pilots not to fly. And there's a pretty simple reason for it, right? At American, United, Southwest, they all fly the 737 MAX, but then they also fly hundreds of those older versions of the 737. So with the MAX not flying, the U.S. pilots can just go back to the old planes that they were flying. They don't need to be retrained. It's no big deal. In Air Canada's case, Air Canada doesn't have any of those older 737s. They only have the MAX. So they hired all these pilots to fly the MAX. They trained them to fly the MAX. And now there is literally nothing for them to fly. So they're being paid not to fly. The pilots don't like it very much, because my understanding is they're still being paid less than they would have been actually flying. And certainly the airline doesn't like it either. But they really have no choice. And it's very expensive and difficult to retrain a pilot. So Air Canada doesn't want to be in a position where they have these 737 MAX pilots, and then they go train them to fly another airplane, say the Airbus A320, but then Boeing gets the airplane recertified, and they have to go back to the Boeing. It's really tough to do. So Air Canada is basically saying, pilots, sit tight, and let's wait this one out.
Yeah, so this is going to be another cost for Boeing, too. If Boeing is going to start repaying some of these airlines for all the costs that they've lost, this is another cost.
Absolutely. You know, Boeing has set aside several billion dollars to pay airlines for all the expenses they're incurring. I think we've known for a while this is going to cost Boeing an absolute fortune. And I know that there's a lot of airlines out there that can't wait to get the money that they're owed. But my understanding is it's just going to take a while for that to happen.
Brian, what's going on with Alaska Airlines? I know that they've been trying to step up some competition. There's been some stepped up competition involving Alaska. But tell us about it.
Yeah, Alaska Airlines is now the fifth largest airline in the United States, which is pretty big for an airline that people think of only as a Pacific Northwest and state of Alaska airline. And, you know, they have a lot of competitive routes. They're doing their best. They bought Virgin America. They're big where I live in California and in Seattle and in Oregon. But they're also, believe it or not, they are still big in Alaska, right? So people, especially in Chicago, when you see an Alaska plane, you're probably like, this is a ridiculous name for an airline that flies to Chicago. But they fly to a lot of small communities in Alaska. They fly from Chicago to Anchorage. And what they said last week on their earnings call is it's very interesting. A lot of the other airlines have rediscovered Alaska as a great summer tourist destination. So you have American Airlines flying a Boeing 787 from Dallas-Fort Worth to Anchorage. You have other airlines expanding to Anchorage. It's almost like the new Iceland. You remember that Iceland was very popular. It still is popular, but it was super popular for a couple of years there. Airlines couldn't wait to add capacity. And this is happening a little bit in Alaska right now. And, you know, the Alaska market is so important to Alaska Airlines that it sounds like they might try to defend their turf a little bit more. And, you know, maybe, Steve, that means that next summer there's going to be unbeatable deals between the continental United States and Alaska. That's often what happens, right? If an airline wants to defend its turf, it's going to add capacity. That leads to lower fares and consumers win. So we'll have to watch that carefully next year.
So what? Give us a sense of how Alaska is doing generally, and will the other airlines, do you think, compete in return?
Yeah, you know, Alaska generally is a pretty profitable airline. We don't hear about it as much as, say, Southwest Airlines, but Alaska is very consistently profitable. It's a well-run airline. It's actually a low-cost carrier, even though people don't think of it that way. They have a great brand and marketing strategy on the West Coast. It's been a little bit tough for them to absorb Virgin America because, like I said, they bought Virgin America a few years ago. And these were airlines with different cultures and ethos and airplane types. And, you know, people pay a lot of attention, right, to the United and Continental merger and the other mergers. Alaska is going through this as well. It is really hard to meld two airlines into one. So that's something Alaska is going to be dealing with for a while.
All right, Brian, good conversation. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Brian Summers is senior aviation business editor for Skift.com. Follow him on Twitter at Brian Summers and Skift as well at Skift. Make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report delivered to your inbox each week at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off 38 points. NASDAQ futures off 38 points. S&P futures off nearly 7 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. Around the globe, a rough night in the markets in Asia and Europe, markets off from 2 to 2.5% on new trade concerns. Let's focus in on that now with agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us. Orion, here we are again with trade talks front and center and more tariffs.
Same old, same old. It's been going on, it seems like, for a year at least, and maybe even longer than that. But we keep getting reports after they conclude their negotiations and their talks. They were constructive. But that doesn't mean much as far as actually settling the situation, and so it goes on. Yesterday, we saw the hog market drop to a five-month low because of the escalation of the U.S.-China trade situation. American hog farmers were hit after China, the world's biggest pork consumer, also the biggest producer, by the way, imposed retaliatory tariffs on imports of U.S. pork last year as part of the trade war between the world's two largest economies. And so day before yesterday, we saw lean hog contracts down the $3 daily limit. And then again yesterday, we saw hog futures sharply lower with the October contract down $3.57 a hundredweight. December down 4.27 because with that limit down move the day before yesterday, we expanded the trading limits from $3 a hundredweight to $4.50 a hundredweight. Grain market pretty much the same. The situation with China pushed grain prices lower yesterday, particularly the soybean contract that was hit again. And probably we're doing a weekly loss again in the soybean market this week. And we saw the soybeans down yesterday. Well, let me see what. Right here, the nearby soybean contract was down 16.25 cents, corn down 6.75 cents, and wheat down 8 cents. So it's not getting any better, sir.
Yeah, so when China this morning says that it is not afraid of fighting a trade war and it will put retaliatory measures in place, countermeasures, what does that tell you about especially how things might be going forward in the ag prices and ag markets?
Well, they're not going to be helped at all. The only thing now that will really turn the grain market around would be a weather situation. And so far, we have recovered fairly well from the spring planting situation. And we're getting the kind of weather now that we need. Although come harvest time, it's going to be a long harvest, Steve, because it was a long planting season. So that means that crops will be maturing probably over a 2 or 3 month period. I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of corn and soybean harvest taking place in late October, early November, maybe even into December because of the planting delay there. So it's been an unusual year. Every farmer and every market analyst I've talked to, I ask them the same question. Have you ever in your career seen a spring like we have this year? And I haven't found one yet. Who said, yeah, back in 68. Yeah. No, I haven't. Haven't found that at all. It's just been a very unusual year. But take advantage of the good weather we're having now. Bill and Wendy are going to be at the McHenry County Fair today. That's not too far from us at Woodstock. Good fair, and there are a lot of other excellent fairs. And then, of course, the Wisconsin State Fair leads off the Midwest Parade, and that's coming up. Illinois State Fair and Indiana and Iowa. And so quit worrying about the weather. If you can,
go get something on a stick.
About markets for an hour or so and go out to a fair.
Yeah, go get something to eat on a stick, right?
Absolutely, because every year they come up with something new that you can deep fry. And probably the most unusual one I've experienced was a county fair that I forget how many years ago, but they served a quarter pound butter stick that had been deep fried, they served it on a stick.
Yeah. Delicious. So, Orin, what's on the morning show tomorrow?
On the morning show tomorrow, Jim Fazell, as usual, will be making his appearance and we'll be talking markets. Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services, who also farms in Indiana, hasn't been with us on the air for a while, but he is coming back to join us tomorrow because Indiana probably, there are the three I states, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa. They're the big producers of corn and beans, and every crop report we get to showed Indiana with really slow planting situations and everything. And so we'll be talking about Indiana and the other states, but we'll be interested in whether or not Indiana got back and planted all of the acres that they had intended to. So,
all right. Well, Orion, have a great weekend. We will be listening to the morning show tomorrow.
Okay, and same to you, my friend.
Orion Samuelson, again, the morning show at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August the 2nd. Jobs and unemployment numbers for July take front and center focus this morning. Economists are forecasting about 151,000 jobs were added last month. That might indicate a slowing economy after 191,000 jobs were created in June. The experts see the unemployment rate falling to 3.6%, down from 3.7% in June. Also today, we'll get a balance of trade for June. Trade analysts are expecting the deficit on international trade to narrow to just under $1 billion to $54.7 billion. It's another big day for earnings as well. We'll get earnings from oil giant Chevron and Exxon Mobil. Investors will also hear today from Cinemark, Ferrari, Honda Motor, restaurant brands, and Sprint. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, August the 2nd.